You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. On today's episode, it is all me, all show, all the time. Tony will be back on Friday. It's tomorrow. Listen to the podcast on a Thursday to preview the weekend's games of the Magic and Kings. But today, evergreen kind of podcast, just a deep discussion about some storylines or some predictions I have or some speculation I have. You know, I love to speculate. That's kind of why I have an NBA podcast. So I'm going to do that for a little bit. And I'm kind of going to lead up to kind of a bigger point I'm trying to make. We'll probably go 10 to 15 minutes, and then you guys can look forward to Friday's podcast. And, of course, Tony and I will be back on Monday with our weekly show. And hopefully by then, Victor Oladipo will be back looking at a Pacers team that possibly is in full health by then. Knock on wood, I don't know where Vic's status is right now. I know he is still doing one-on-one practicing and hoping he gets into like a full team practice, but I don't know what the timetable is. The team is pretty tight-lipped about that after they put him on the indefinitely list. But, you know, there's that to look forward to, and we really hope Oladipo can come back before the 76ers game at the latest, but maybe by the Wizards game would be really nice. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll get to today's podcast. I wanted to start today's show talking about Bojan Bogdanović. The Croatian star, I would say, has turned himself into, I think, a super valuable trade piece. So let's kind of walk it back from there. So in the eight-game Victor Oladipo absence, I would say Bojan has been one of the critical players to help carry the Pacers kind of over the finish line in a lot of games, get him to that 4-3 record, get him to that, you know, staying afloat and being able to survive. While at the same time, he's exposed some of his flaws as like the number one go-to guy. He's pretty much proved that he's a really valuable player and can help you win games today. Now, fortunately for the Pacers, they need that, but they also kind of don't at the same time. There's a window that they have that isn't actually open yet. They're not quite in there. It's going to be probably after this season, the next 2 or 3 years, where they have to have a shot, but bring in the right amount of guys, get the right amount of young talent, superstars, veterans, to really compete for a championship. That's probably going to be, I would say, 2019-20 season, and maybe the two after that is where it's going to have that window where you hit Sabonis' peak, Turner's peak possibly if he's not traded, Oladipo's going to still be at his best, and then you got to bring in enough guys around them to kind of win it, to maybe compete for a championship. Not necessarily win one, but at least compete for one. Bojan probably doesn't fit in that window at 29 years old, but today he helps you win games. And the problem with Bojan, too, is he's an expiring contract, which means that next season he's a free agent, or in the summer, I'm sorry, he's a free agent. And the way he's playing, he's going to get a decent contract. I know last free agency, Bojan wanted a 3-year, $50 million deal. Didn't get that. He got 2 for $20. But I think he could get close to probably 12 to 15 a year, maybe not for the 3-year, you know, 50 he looked for last time, but probably 2 for $30. Something like that. I mean, Ariza got 2 for $30. Now, Ariza plays really good D, but Bojan is shooting like a 53 and 50% shooting split. So, I mean, he's been incredible. He's going to be a 50-50, 80% basis, what his stat line is. And somebody's going to go through all the cap space this summer and talk themselves into, oh, we can make Bojan our starting small forward. Unfortunately, I don't think as a starting small forward, he kind of caps your team's level of being able to compete for a championship because there are so many good small forwards in the league. You need a really good defensive player that, you know, love to have a two-way guy, but at the minimum, you need a defensive guy, not an offensive guy. There's just not enough flip because, you know, you're going against Butler or Kawhi or you want to put Hayward or Tatum. Like, those guys are the guys you have to beat, and Bojan isn't helping you beat those three guys because he can't defend them, and he definitely probably can't, you know, outscore them. However, too, the other part of this is that you got Doug McDermott off your bench, who is basically 60 to 70 to 80% of what Bojan is. So, you know, if in the future your success is kind of bringing another small forward to replace Bojan and moving Bojan to the bench, well, you can't have McDermott and Bogdanović on the bench. It's kind of a redundancy. It's the same kind of player. You know, they aren't super great together because they are both kind of bad defenders. And honestly, for like $7 million, which might be like half of what Bojan makes, McDermott is probably worth it because you can then spend more money on a valuable starting small forward who can really help you win a championship. Now, Bojan's a great player. I don't want anybody to think I'm not saying that. He's a very good player, and he fits what they're doing right now. He helps you win games today. But like I said, he's probably not the guy who helps you win a championship. However, him winning games today could be valuable to some teams. When you look across the NBA landscape, there are a couple teams out there that really want to win today because they don't have the draft pick, and you know they might be wanting to give up a young prospect. You know, you could flip Bojan's expiring and with Corey Joseph or with Darren Collison, kind of get another expiring deal and a young player. That might be worth it if that team feels like they bring in Bojan and Corey Joseph, they're going to win more games, can make the playoffs, get an 8 seed, get smoked, but be the 8 seed. So there are two teams that are kind of in mind there. There's the Sacramento Kings, who the Patriots just played, who are, I believe, sitting at 11-11 or 11-12. And they've kind of got a bunch of young players. I think it'd be hard to probably get Buddy Hield away from them. Now you're searching way down the roster for like Scal Labissiere and Harry Giles and all those guys. But, you could possibly talk them into giving up maybe Buddy Hield if you give them like DC. They've already had, so maybe not. But a Bojan, with them, it makes a little less sense. But the team it really makes sense with is the Dallas Mavericks, who are a team who doesn't have their pick. They clearly want to win kind of now. It might be Dirk's last season. They want to win. And they have a redundancy at a young position, a point guard, where they've got Dennis Smith Jr. and Luka Doncic, who are both the same type of player and really can't play together. Plus, the Mavs have this expiring. They have the Wesley Matthews expiring. Now, I think the Mavs would love to flip, Dennis Smith and Wes Matthews for a really good player, a Bradley Beal, if they could do that. But I think come February and they really want to see if they can get enough players to help them win today, I think you could flip Corey Joseph and Bojan, and you might add in another rookie throwing TJ Leaf to get Wes Matthews and Dennis Smith, and then you take a shot at Dennis Smith. So at this point, then you're shifting basically your future, looking at Dennis Smith and Aaron Holiday as your 1-2 point guard for the future. That lowers that cap hold from, I think it's $17 million of paying to Joseph and Collison, which it will be more for Joseph next season, probably more like 10 next season, and Collison will be gone. But you shift that to maybe like a $7 million cap hit for your point guard spot, allowing you to, and then you've got $7 million on your backup small forward. There's a lot more money left over to pay Sabonis eventually, or do you go after and get a small forward who you can pay, like a big-name guy? I know they don't, the Patriots have all the cap space, but they also have a lot of empty spots. So it's kind of a fake cap space in a sense where, you have $50 million in space, but you also need to fill 8 spots. So if they can shift as much money to, lower-paid rookies and stuff like that, then they can kind of hoard up enough money to pay for that valuable, small forward they need. And that's the kind of a thought I've had is, and there might be other teams out there that, the Mavericks make the most sense right now because of the situation they're in, where they don't have their first-round pick, they want to be the 8 seed, they haven't made the playoffs in a while, there's all of that factors, where the Pacers can sacrifice, once only with that. I think we all do play something with the playoffs no matter what, but they can sacrifice winning 48 games for 42 games to better set themselves up for next summer's free agency or whatever it is to go after. And, because their window is 2019 to 2021. Their window is not this season. The window might not be next season. It might be even a year early. It might be 2020 to 2022. That's probably the time when you'll have Oladipo still at his peak in his late 20s, combined with Sabonis hitting his peak in his early mid-20s, the same with Turner. Obviously, Turner on his roster, we'll see. But that's kind of what you're looking at is, can you get a guy in who could fit that time frame and take them kind of to a big three? And I don't know who that player is, but that's a possibility. There could be a lot of free agents next summer. Chris Middleton, but everybody wants him. And there'll be some guys there they could possibly get to do. But the other move is obviously to go out and flip Bojan with some picks and another guy, a Turner, for example, to get a really good player. And that's what I'll talk about next after this quick break. So today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by Action Heat, the battery-powered heated clothing. I'll tell you what. So I lived in Syracuse for 3 years. It is one of the coldest places on this planet. It snows a ton. I can remember one time it was like 0 degrees with a wind chill of negative 10 or 15. And you can layer up. You can layer up, you know, with a long sleeve shirt and a sweatshirt and a heavy coat and a hat and another beanie over that and two pairs of gloves. You still can't get warm. It's still cold. You got to walk to class for 20 minutes. They don't cancel class because it's Syracuse and they're, you know, they never cancel class. So it's freezing. And I would have loved to have something like Ash needs these battery powered Heely clothing that keeps you warm longer and helps you stay warm. And that's what I would have loved to have. Action Heat starts at $39.99. They have all kinds of products. They have heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, underwear, undershirts, long johns, anything like that you think would you could wear, you could have to keep you warm basically from head to toe. I would have loved that because, honestly, it was freezing in Syracuse. To get a 20% off discount at checkout, you can use the promo code LOCKEDON. So let's go to actionheat.com/lockedon. If you do that, you get 20% off your checkout. You should do this, especially if you live in a cold place. I know there are some Locked On Pacer podcast fans out there that are in the tundra. You should do this now. You should buy this stuff. It'll keep you warm throughout the winter. That is the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout will save you 20%. All right, welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. I wanted to finish this podcast out with some trade rumor speculation. And obviously, you know where I'm starting, and that's with Bradley Beal. So, if you're the Wizards, you're only giving up Bradley Beal for probably two things. Well, three things. Guaranteed star. So, you flip him for, you know, if you do CJ McCollum for Bradley Beal straight up, you do it. A future asset that could become a star. So, Brandon Ingram, or, I mean, he's kind of the one out there, maybe even Alonzo Ball or Jaylen Brown, kind of those kind of guys who have a potential to be a superstar, or using him to get rid of just all your bad contracts or really the Yamahimi contract in order to have some cap space or something to sort of add more pieces around a Beal, Porter, whoever you get kind of trio. So you want expirings back for Beal basically is what you want. So if you're the Pacers, you don't quite have that young superstar. I mean, you maybe could convince him of Turner. But let's say you want to keep Turner. It's fair. You want to keep Sabonis and Turner. They're both really good players, different ways, but you want to keep both. So then here's the move. You take on Yamahimi's deal. You take on Bradley Beal's deal. That's $40 million. It's $40 million this year, $40 million next year, and then I think Beal has one more year after that. He does at 28. So you're taking on, right, about $42 million for the next season, whatever it is. You're taking in a decent amount of money, but it's fine. It works out. You got to give back 40. So here's how you would do it if I'm the Pacers. I would give up, you know, Thaddeus Young, Tyreek Evans, Bojan Bogdanovic, and Aaron Holiday. And then you probably give up Leaf too as well, or Kyle O'Quinn to make it kind of work. So you have to give up four players, no picks. You don't give them a pick because taking on Yamahimi's deal, you don't get a pick back. But what it does for Washington is they get Aaron Holiday, a kind of young, could be young superstar or young good player. Maybe they can put stuff on Leaf as well. If you do that, or you do Kyle O'Quinn. But they also get off all their deals. Now they've cleared $40 million in space next year. I know they're going to need a lot of players that the Wizards will, but now they'll be under the cap. They can go get a guy, you know, they can bring in maybe a Boogie Cousins, for example, kind of like that, and convince Wall and themselves in a Wall Boogie nightmare of a team. But for the Pacers, this kind of works, you think about it, because, yeah, it kind of ruins their rotation right now, right? It knocks them down. So if you get rid of three rotation guys, that's Thaddeus, Evans, and Bojan for one rotation guy. So you go down from 9 to 7, essentially. But to win a playoff series, you only need 7 or 8. And frankly, you're sort of just giving up maybe a successful playoff run in 2019 for a lot more success in 2020 and 2021. Think about this. So the lineup looks like this, probably with Beal. So it's probably Darren Collison starting point guard. Then you throw in Oladipo, Beal, Sabonis, Turner, with Corey Joseph McDermott off the bench, plus some combination of either Yamahimi or Kyle O'Quinn or TJ Leaf. I think if I'm the Pacers, I'd probably try to convince him to take O'Quinn over Leaf, just because you can maybe use Leaf in the rotation. But really, you're not looking at this year. You're looking at the following year. So then when you go back the following year, if you add those two guys, it puts the Pacers at $102 million salary cap. You probably bring back Joseph around the same number, maybe 10. I believe you own his bird rights by that point because you've traded for his last deal and you got three. I think, well, he's been on the team 2 years, but I think because you traded for him, you start to own his bird rights, I believe is how it works. So you can kind of wait to sign him. He'll have a cap hold, but you bring him back and that puts you right about the salary cap 110, and you can use your mid-level exception to get a guy. So you still got seven guys, but then you have the possibility of being able to flip Turner, who at $18 million can probably fetch a decent at this point, you're probably looking for a point guard, or I mean, I guess you're maybe looking for a small forward because you have Sabonis at center. But you know, you can maybe bring in a power forward, or you can, you know, bet your hopes on Alizé, elevating him to the power forward spot. So at this point, you're looking at a team that has about seven rotation guys plus maybe an Alizé or a rookie, and that's enough. I mean, you flip Turner, you can maybe get another guy, but 7 to 8 guys is really enough to compete for a championship. It does make you thinner, but when you have the top of Oladipo, Beal, and Sabonis, you sort of have this really good team. Plus, then you have Turner who can fit in there too. And maybe I should count Turner in that big four. You've got four guys who are top 60 NBA players, two who are a top 20. That's a legitimate team that can win a championship. You have to make it work. You have to figure out how to play Sabonis and Turner together, which they're starting to figure out. I know there's some doubts about can it work and it's so limited, whatever. But if you make that work, plus you've got, you know, Beal and Oladipo, you've got a really good NBA team, and you just figure out the rest. You just have your two, and you figure out the rest. Now, the Wizards probably don't want to make this trade because they don't want to get rid of Bradley Beal, but this is a trade that would make sense for both teams because it just helps the Wizards get off a bunch of cap space and let them go after a free agent next summer, and gives them, you know, if they want to bring back one of those guys, that they will have the possibility to. But ultimately, it just kind of gets them off the books to go after a free agent and have enough cap space to go for somebody. Because the cap's going to be about $108 million next year. So the Pacers can probably bring in a guy who could be a rotation player on the mid-level, plus bring back Joseph, you know, and that'll be enough. They'll have seven guys. The lineup will be Joseph, Oladipo, Beal, Sabonis, Turner, Corey Joseph, McDermott, and whoever's on the mid-level deal, plus Alizé and a rookie. That's enough guys to compete. That is enough. And that's how I could see that happening and that actually working. I don't know if it actually would happen, let's put it that way, but I could see that working for the Pacers because you really don't need 9 to 10 guys to be a good NBA team. To win a lot of regular season games, you do. But when you have Oladipo and you have Beal, two guys who just, I mean, they go hard every night, you should be able to win 50 to 55 games. And you make the East a lot more interesting. You make it, you know, you make it, them think twice about, okay, is this team really, can this team might be able to beat, you know, Boston or the 76ers, because they've got two of the best 25 players on the court at all times. And at the end of the day, you're looking at a Sixers team who, depending where Simmons is, if he can't still shoot, he's probably not top 25. And a Celtics team who can't figure it out. So, you know, Beal makes the most sense here. I would sacrifice the 2019 playoffs just to get Beal. I would sacrifice that, you know, you still make the playoffs, but sacrifice the super duper success in one season just to have a shot at like I said before in the early segment, there's a window in 2020, 2021, 2022 to win a championship if they get in the right, you know, number two at Oladipo. Because they hit the right time at Rouse's peak, and Beal could kind of fill that, and this team could be really, really good. The other player I'd look at, and it's hard, that's Anthony Davis. And the only reason I think the Pacers have a shot at Davis is because they could be willing to give up a guy like Turner or Sabonis, plus a pick, plus Aaron Holiday could probably do it. So Davis, you'd wait to trade for next summer, whether there's going to be a huge sweepstakes, and you would try to convince the Pelicans that, like, a deal that involved, let's say, Miles Turner and Aaron Holiday, and you pick, you know, you can use cap space the rest of the way, but those two guys, you convince them that those two guys plus two first round picks, and, you know, maybe you pick your date, so you pick 2022 and 2024 is like enough. You know, I think you're going to get the Celtics are going to offer whatever happened with the Kings pick, whatever kind of random first rounders they've got, plus maybe a Jaylen Brown or and now Horford, but I don't know, is Miles Turner a better young player than all those guys? Maybe not Jaylen Brown, but you could talk yourself into Turner being as good of a player as Jaylen Brown if he plateaued this year. And yeah, the Lakers are going to come in and try to throw in Brandon Ingram, and the same kind of thing. Can you talk yourself into Turner being a better, especially on a better deal, you know, as a rookie than those guys? Plus, you get Aaron Holiday in that, who in Holiday, if he has kind of had some promise, and you put him into Drew Holiday's brother, and maybe that works together. Like, there's a real possibility that Holiday and Turner could be enough to get Davis with the right amount of picks, and it actually might be better than anything the Celtics or Lakers can really offer. I'm sure there'll be another team that'll come in and throw in a, you know, it's going to take some team being ridiculous, and that could be the ridiculous move that gets Davis out of there. The problem is then, right, if Davis doesn't stay in Indiana, it's not worth it. But then you get 1 year of Davis in the East with Oladipo, with Sabonis, so he doesn't have to play center. You're appeasing him there. That team's a championship team. I mean, that's the top five, top six NBA player with a top 15 guy plus a guy who's in his top 50. That's another team that can win a championship. And again, by doing that, you can fill up more pieces around him. You can bring back Bojan if you want. You can really put together a team that can win with the right amount of spacing. And I wonder if, honestly, if that's sort of in Pritchard's mind right now. Like, I wonder if his idea behind signing Turner was to just lock him up, lock up the next summer, so next summer he can really make a move next summer. And Tony has speculated about this on our podcast, but the Patriots have been gearing toward making a move in 2019. I wonder if Turner's locking up was like, all right, we get him locked up. If he has this great year, his fourth year, then we'll keep him. He's on a cheap deal. It's great. If not, he's probably still tradable because he's a young player who's going to be still pretty good and probably worth about his contract. And can we convince a team that he's better than he is possible? Can we sell them on, well, Turner's kind of hasn't gotten the opportunity to take the amount of shots that he wants, and he's a great defensive player, and you have to just sculpt his offense? Maybe they could. And I mean, you know, the young players to flip for Davis, there aren't a ton out there, I mean, that are like, I'm not sure you would say Ingram and Brown are worlds better than Miles Turner at this moment, and Turner's locked up for 3 more years at a pretty reasonable deal. Plus, you throw in Aaron Holiday, and that might be a pretty valuable little duo of guys to go after Anthony Davis. Both of those speculations. I don't know if it'll happen. You can't make the Anthony Davis trade next summer. Either one of those guys on the Pacers for 2019 combined with Oladipo and Sabonis is probably good enough to win a championship. If you got Davis too, you wouldn't be sacrificing too much of the future yet because you wouldn't take on any bad deals. But the same kind of deal for Bradley Beal is available there for Solomon Hill and Anthony Davis combined. Hill's not on quite of a former Pacer again. Isn't that crazy that summer that Solomon Hill and Yamahimi both signed just terrible deals? Hill probably has a little more value because if he could just stay healthy, he'd be fine. A decent player. Probably not worth $13 million, but it'd be decent. A decent player, but you could do kind of something similar. That'd be $40 million well combined money between Davis and Solomon Hill. You could do something similar to the Bradley Beal trade and get some value out of Hill more than you could Yamahimi. But it's just interesting because the Pacers really are in a position where if Aaron Holiday is kind of has this pretty decent rookie season where he kind of shows, oh, this guy could be a starting point guard in the league, you could kind of capitalize that with a decent Turner deal to really make something happen, to really go after a good player. Because I don't think you're signing a guy in Indiana. You're not getting a free agent to sign Indiana, but you can trade for one and then use the allure of Oladipo and the allure of Sabonis and this team of like having a shot winning a championship to convince a guy to stay. I think you could really do that. That's all I've got for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers on Twitter and me at FreedomAdam5. Like I said, Tony will be back on Friday. That's tomorrow. It's in the show on Thursday when it comes out to preview the Magic and Kings games of the weekend. And then we'll be back together on Monday or probably Tuesday, actually, to after the Wizards game to do a whole week preview and discuss kind of what's coming up. So look forward to a weekly show on next Monday or Tuesday. I hope you guys liked our Caitlin and Whitney podcast we did earlier in the week. Give us kind of, if you have any thoughts, comments, concerns, feel free to tweet at us. We always like those. That's all for his Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.